This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Peter Berezin, Chief Global Investment Strategist at BCH Research, for his thoughts on how global markets have been impacted by COVID-19. In the meantime, let's talk about that. Let's do our own analysis of markets. Chuang, what are you seeing there in your crystal ball?
Well, no crystal ball because I've got a bloomer right now with live prices, thank God.
Better than a crystal ball.
Better than crystal ball. The Nikkei is at 19,829 points, up by 0.24%, and Korea's Kospi is at 1,943.4 points, up by 0.6%, and Australia is up by 0.7% to 5,357 points. Obviously, all of them are quite buoyed by basically the mantra that you never fight the Fed, right? And if the Fed wants to unleash its bazookas upon the markets, you can't fight that wall of money.
You never fight the Fed.
Fight the Fed.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Chuang, but am I looking at Brent crude under $20 there?
Yeah, you are. Basically, Brent is following West Texas down because obviously yesterday, U.S. oil, which is America's biggest U.S. Oil-backed ETF, basically unleashed sold all their June contract oil contracts, fearing that oil has a further downside to go. So that caused another wall of worry in the energy markets.
And how were US markets, Noel?
The Dow and S&P 500 closed up 1.5%. The Nasdaq was up 1.1%. I think this was really on the back of news that some parts of the economy in the US are opening up. I think some states like Georgia, Oklahoma, for example, and I think New York has indicated that it will be reopening some parts with some precautions, of course, after 15 May. So I guess some certainty and the market likes that.
Right. So for more market insights, we speak to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at US Trusted Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thank you so much for taking some time to speak to us this morning. Now, first quarter US GDP will be released this Wednesday, with most economists expecting a deep contraction. What are your expectations? And is this a preview of more bad news to come?
Well, first of all, the market's already priced that in, so it's going to be an ugly number, unprecedented when it comes to how steeply we see the decline in output. So, I mean, whether it's, you know, the street is looking for a worst-case scenario, so I mean, whether it's 30-25% annualized down, we'll see. But the good news, the market's looking beyond this, so it's going to be a historic number, but it's already been discounted.
Okay, some of the biggest names reporting this week, Joe: Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, clearly Apple as well, Facebook. What is your sense of both the consumer and corporate markets into which these four or five big players play into?
Well, I mean, when we look beyond the COVID-19 crisis, when we look on the other side into 2021, technology, along with life sciences, healthcare, they're going to be part of the solution to the pandemic. So, you know, whether it's social distancing, looking at, you know, how to use technology for healthcare, for telemedicine and so forth. So we're still long technology. We like long technology for the long term. And, you know, you could say some of these companies, you know, like in Amazon, I mean, you know, they're kind of the lifeline for a lot of people sitting at home in shelter. That's not going to change anytime soon. So from our point of view, think of it this way. The big get bigger, the big get stronger coming out of the COVID-19, and that really leads to a lot of large tech U.S. company names. So you want to own these companies for the long term.
I guess there's some concern in the market as well, Joe, that these four or five names take up something like about 22 to 21% of the S&P. I want to cite the bond trader Jeff Gundlach. He's placed a short on the S&P at about 2,700 points. Is there a concern that these four or five names take up such a big component of the S&P?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, in a sense that you don't want to see that concentration. And conversely, the energy sector is now what? I think it's less than 4% of the S&P, and you got some great names in there, relatively speaking, for the long term. So anytime you have concentration, anytime you have a crowded trade, anytime you have like a narrowness when it comes to leadership in the markets, that's worrisome. But in this case, technology, health, life sciences, healthcare, that's where you want to be. But I totally agree with your question in the sense that it's something to watch very carefully, the concentration of who's moving the markets higher. But these companies are legitimate. They've been around. And as I said, the tech sector in general is going to get stronger coming out as opposed to weaker.
What about banks? Are you overweight or underweight in this sector?
Well, since I work for one, the banks, here again, think of it this way. There was a concentration, whether it's airlines, banks, telecommunication, technology. There was already a concentration amongst big companies, market cap, kind of having a fortified position in the economy, not only just in the United States, but globally. I think that gets stronger as we go into, say, 2021. So I think one of our key themes is bigger is better, whether it's banks, telecommunications, technology, energy companies, because they have the balance sheets. They have the core competencies. They still have the wherewithal to pay dividends. Someday they'll do share buybacks, but that's on hold right now. So to me, when I look around the world or look at the U.S., if bigger is better, bigger will be stronger, the weaker will go by the wayside when we get into 2021. And that's what the market is pricing for. And that's how investors should kind of tilt their portfolios.
Now, speaking of prices, Joe, commodity prices are at record lows due to weak global demand. Would you consider adding any of them to an investment portfolio at this point?
Well, I mean, we got some clients, they like gold here, and I think that's legitimate to talk about, given all the debt we're taking on, sovereign debt we're taking on. But, you know, it's more of an overlay. It's not a core, you know, kind of asset we want to own. But, like, when it comes to commodities, copper prices kind of bounce back a little bit here. But, I think when we have this conversation 6 months from now, we're going to be surprised how much commodity prices come back, because the economy is going to restart. We're going to reopen. China's doing its part, Southeast Asia, Europe, belatedly the U.S. So I think commodity prices, you know, they're bottoming. I mean, they're definitely bottoming. It's going to be a U-shaped recovery. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're still fossil fuels. We're still going to produce a lot of cars, lithium batteries for EVs and so forth. So they're going to come back. So I think this could be a good time to kind of put some money to work in the commodity complex. Not a lot. I favor healthcare and technology over commodities, but commodities look cheaper here. So put some in the portfolio.
Well, not necessarily oil, Joe. West Texas Oil plunged, I think, 25% overnight. U.S. Oil, the big oil-backed ETF, dumped all its June contract oil for delivery, which is the next spot month. What do you make of that particular transaction? And are you more concerned about the immediate term? Not just in terms of the demand destruction, but also on the supply side.
Yeah, I mean, good question. I'm not going to speak to the ETF, you know, related to oil. I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about, here's the problem globally. It's okay to reopen an economy, right? So we're going to reopen the global economy, so we'll increase the supply, but where's the demand? The demand will be lagged. It'll come later, Q3, Q4. So here in the United States, you got certain states opening up, but, you know, a lot of people aren't going to run off and go into restaurants just yet or get on airlines and travel. So the supply, I think, problem is reconciling itself slowly but surely. It's the demand side. It's going to take some time for people to go out and face masks, to go to on airlines and on go into restaurants. So I think oil continues to struggle, and we're going to see a brutal kind of flushing out of the energy sector when the weaker players go by the wayside and the stronger companies get stronger. And what happens between Russia, Saudi Arabia, and the United States is still to be seen in terms of, like, how do they reconcile, you know, who produces what at what levels and what prices.
Okay, well, America wants to open up its doors again. Some states are already doing so. Southern California beaches, obviously, quite a popular destination. Joe, are you concerned that there could be a reinfection curve, which some people say might be more serious the second time around?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, and that's kind of the great debate now. The narrative has shifted in terms of, like, a second wave. Look at Singapore. I mean, very close to where you folks are. They thought they had the perfect model. They thought it had locked down, and they had a second wave. They'll deal with it. They'll move on. So I think there'll be some hot spots the second time around. But remember, the healthcare system, hospitals, PPE, masks, ventilators, will be less stressed then. And that's important, because we went into this, say, mid-March and April. It was like, oh my God moment. We're not prepared. We will be prepared for a second wave. And I think that gives some hope. And I think kind of satisfaction, so to speak, or confidence to investors that we won't have to do a second lockdown. We won't have to do, you know, the IMF calls this the great lockdown. I don't see a great lockdown 2.0 coming with a second wave because we'll be ready, more ventilators, masks, and so forth. And we're closer to treatment and a vaccination. So I'm worried about it, but I don't think it's a game changer like round one.
Joe, thank you for speaking with us this morning. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. And speaking of banks, Deutsche Bank has become the latest European lender to prepare for mounting losses with the pandemic in mind, setting aside about 500 million euros to cover bad loans after a better-than-expected first-quarter performance.
So in a company statement during the first 3 months of the year, I think in the pre-release statement, Deutsche Bank's revenue, 6.4 billion euros and net income of 66 million euros, beating analyst estimates. And for the most part, mostly remain unaffected by the outbreak. But bear in mind, this is historical figures. But the provision for soured credit, I think, was probably the highest in 6 years. And the bank has scrapped its minimum target for capital buffers as fallout from the virus spreads. I think it's well within the regulatory framework.
Okay, so for all of last year, Deutsche set aside 720 million euros for bad loan provisions. When we look at American banks like Wells Fargo and Bank of America, they set aside between as much as 6 to 8 times as many as they did for the previous year. So if that's any guide, then we can kind of have an idea where Deutsche is going to go with this.
And we'll be talking about markets more after this, actually, with Peter Berizin, Chief Global Investment Strategist with BC8 Research on the impact of COVID-19 on global markets. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.